This week on Retronauts, you are not ready for these jams. Everyone, and welcome to this latest, exciting, thrilling, extravaganza episode of Retronauts. I am Jeremy Parrish, and with me this week, in a room full of privileged white guys, it's...
I am a Polygon Man advocate, Bob Mackie. Bring him back. If Nat can exist, Polygon Man has a place in this world.
Exactly.
Wow, it's hard to beat that. I was thinking about the Black Ikes disc, which came out before the PlayStation, which had a Korn song. This is Shane Bettenhausen, huge PlayStation 1 music fan.
And also Mr. PlayStation.
Well, no, I'm not Mr. PlayStation, but I do work there. And
Monsieur PlayStation.
I own all of them. I mean, not all of them, but one of all of them.
Mm-hmm. Do you even own a Net Yarose?
No, but I passed up the opportunity to buy one twice because I was like, how hard is it to find the games for that? That's a deep cut episode you should do in the future if a background.
Net Yarose. I don't know really anything about it.
If you look hard on the net, there is a scene that chronicles some of the games. And a few of the games came on demo discs in places.
I believe Devil Dice started as a Net Yarose game.
You're right.
That's the only one I know about.
Yeah.
Man, we're already on tangents. You know it's a good Retronauts when we haven't even got through the introductions.
Yeah. I forgot to tell what this episode is. Okay. So this episode is the PlayStation 1 Music Special. And this episode is not what it was going to be about 2 days ago, but I wanted to put together just an episode highlighting the best music on PlayStation 1 because, in my opinion, that is the pinnacle of video game music. I love 8-bit music. I love 16-bit music.
I mean, are you asking us to agree with that or disagree with
this
that?
This is a debate now.
You're welcome to have your own opinion. It can be.
Well,
concur or you can disagree.
Yeah, I look forward to you laying out that argument.
Yeah, I'm going to. I put out a call for listeners of Retronauts. That's you, the people listening to this podcast, both by Twitter and by our website, to submit emails or messages on our blog saying, "Here are my favorite PlayStation music picks." And it was going to be like a supplement, you know, the letter section to supplement the main podcast. But there were so many responses that I really feel like this episode just needs to be like us kind of celebrating your music picks because you picked some pretty great music. And a lot of most of the things I was going to highlight have been highlighted by our listeners. So, you know, just to kind of save myself some work, I'm going to let them speak to why these soundtracks are great.
I have a quick theory. Do you think possibly now the remit of Retronauts has expanded to include, you know, the late mid-90s?
Remit of Retronauts includes up to 2008 at this point.
Right, because it moves. But like originally, you know, back in the day, we're a bit of geezers. You know, our generation, many people in our generation view classic chiptunes as the halcyon days. And anything beyond that is kind of cheating. Whereas I wonder now that gamers have aged and like, you know, millennials, other Gen X people have grown up on PS1 era music, that maybe a nostalgia factor, that just the people who happened to be listening were excited, oh, that's the thing I grew up on, and they maybe found it difficult to enjoy chiptunes the same way we did? Just a theory.
I don't know. Speaking as someone who never lost his love for NES and Super NES, et cetera, games, you know, the PlayStation era was really exciting for me as someone who likes good music, especially progressive rock-tinged music, so much of which showed up here. And, you know, like, let me explain why I personally feel like the PS1 specifically is the best era for video game music, which is not to say there wasn't other good music in the past or present, because there is. I just feel like PS1 is where music, like the tech and the artistry really sort of came together perfectly. So obviously, Sony was a company with a tremendous legacy in music. Obviously, you have, you know, the Walkman.
Well,
or the
Discman. Before that, the transistor radio.
Right. Sony was kind of synonymous with music. There was Sony Music. You know, they've been a label for ages. The The Super NES audio processor, the sound chip, was a Sega creation created by Ken Kutaragi.
Right.
And, or at least headed up by his division.
And in many other episodes, you've talked about how that was really when that launched, one of the things that was so much different than Genesis hardware. It could really create this beautiful sample-based stuff that didn't sound like the Mega Drive Genesis sound chip.
Right. Yeah. And so naturally, when Sony created its first home console, audio was very important. I mean, it was not only a CD-ROM-based platform, but it had great audio out capabilities. The original model of PlayStation is considered like a reference standard CD player
audio files. Yeah,
yeah,
that's true.
Like the one that has the three, you know, the red, yellow, white audio ports on the back.
I would interject, you know, if the evolution of main home platforms had been, you know, Famicom NES to Super Nintendo Genesis to PlayStation, then it is like a huge leap. However, for those of us who did have PC Engine CD, Sega CD, early PC CD-ROM, then there was this jarring transition from chiptune-based, you know, generated sound to amazing Redbook audio. And that's kind of where I fell in. Like, you know, pre-PS1, I had played Sega CD and TurboGrafx CD, played EastBook 1 and 2, played Lunar Silver Star. So, like, you know, I think for some of us, PlayStation was where kind of normalized, where all games that all gamers got to play had the same level of great fidelity and composition. But, you know, it wasn't this thing you could not have fathomed.
Okay. I think there's also another factor to consider here, which is disc-based systems before PlayStation either used Redbook audio or they used internally generated, you know, PCM.
Where's the episode where you guys explain all those books? It's like the best episode.
There's an episode.
It's back
like
in the 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a few years.
Literally the color of the book that the specifications were written in.
There's binders. Yeah, there was a red binder and a yellow binder and a green binder.
I love it when I learn things from Retronauts in that episode.
So Redbook audio, just to give a quick reminder, is pre-recorded audio that streams off like a CD player, like you're listening to a CD.
At the same like hertz, same rate and everything.
Yeah. No, I mean like literally you can put a game with Redbook audio into a CD player.
Right. Skip the
data track or destroy your speakers. Yeah. And then the rest of it plays as a standard compact disc.
Yeah. The Batman Returns Sega CD soundtrack, which is amazing. You guys were all wrong. That was in my
I was in my
sister's car CD player.
I stand corrected on that because I went back and when I edited in the music for that episode, I was like, all of this music is great and that's going to be like the music for this episode.
I told myself I wasn't going to say you guys were wrong and like we're 10 minutes in, but like Spencer Nielsen's composition
are
brilliant.
It is Spencer Nielsen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
I thought so.
Okay. So that's a digression. Yellow Book audio is when music is pre-recorded and then streamed, so much more of it can fit on. It's not at CD quality and it's not indexed like a compact disc. So you can't play it outside of the game context.
But it takes up far less space.
It's much more compact. Yeah. But it's still super high quality and it's easier to loop that. And then there is, you know, like the PCM, the internally generated chiptune music. So before PlayStation, CD-based systems either did Redbook audio or they did, you know, internally generated PCM. And that's great. But I don't think Redbook audio is usually the best choice for video games unless you have like a fighting game. That's great because those are naturally like, you know, 90 seconds maximum. So you don't have to worry about looping or anything like that. But
you could only fit like 30 minutes of music on the disc.
Yeah, but like for an RPG or something, you want hours of music and you want, you know, for like dungeon diving or extensive battles or something, you want music that loops naturally. And when you look back to like Lunar on Sega CD.
It's got like 17 tracks, like 10 of them are good.
Yeah. It's got the aerobics workout theme song. Like the battle theme.
The boss battle music's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. But the thing is, if your battle lasts more than about 90 seconds, which often happens, the music stops. There's 2 seconds of dead air as the CD-ROM re-cues and goes back to the beginning of the track.
Those were slow speeds again. Too. I thought they like the song would at least fade out or whatever and then restart, but there was just a freeze in the song?
The song fades down.
And then it fades down.
It ends.
Yeah.
And then there's
restarts.
A gap.
Yeah.
And then it starts again. Yeah.
That was like a one-speed CD drive, right, or something?
Sega CD?
Single-speed with bad cache. But it is true. Like PS1 was out of the box a different musical experience.
Right. You had the support for Yellow Book audio and just higher quality hardware and output. And as a result, I really think, well, you know, also you had a lot of developers who had only worked on cartridge-based systems, like, you know, Squaresoft composers and Konami composers, who pretty much just worked for Genesis or Super NES games, all of a sudden having access to much more powerful hardware where they could bring their discipline to this new platform and really expand and explore the ideas they had in their heads without the limitations of those cartridges and worrying about, like, can I fit all these samples in here?
Right. And well, and a lot of chiptune music would emulate other genres that we love, such as, you know, prog or try to do hip-hop or jazz or something. But it was always within the context of what could be done with that chip, you know, the chip process, the actual hardware in there. But now suddenly if someone wanted to do a jazzy soundtrack or a heavy metal soundtrack, you know, they could really actually do that in a new way too.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, like I said, you have this sort of confluence of technology and creativity. The following generation, like the PlayStation 2 generation, Metal Gear Solid 2 destroyed everything because Hideo Kojima brought in Harry Gregson-Williams, a film composer, and said, do some film compositions for me for the cutscenes. And, you know, so Norihiko Hibino still did the game portions of Metal Gear Solid 2. But I really feel like that was a turning point at which game developers, publishers, designers, composers suddenly said, like, video games should not just look and act like music or like movies. They should sound like it too. So you started getting into these sort of droning, you know, amelodic background filler noise. Like if you look at the music of, you know, Xbox 360 or PlayStation 4 games, it's rarely as memorable as PS1 games because so much of it is film influenced, which isn't to say like there's no memorable music being composed anymore. That's obviously not true. Just that, especially for like big budget games.
Well, I would argue that, you know, from every generation on, we've gotten less music in games too. Mm-hmm. I think from a film perspective too, like you're not used to having BGM running over every scene while everyone talks, whereas 8-bit, 16-bit, you really did. The music almost never faded away. And it's kind of a detriment. Like I'm playing Monster Hunter World and I actually feel like, oh man, I wish there was more music when I'm on like, you know, just an expedition where it waits for the bosses, it waits for conflict. It's very dynamic. And that kind of, by PS2, PS3, PS4 generation, we're getting, you know, fewer games that have music all the time. Whereas I felt PS1, a lot of developers, especially in Japan and Europe, still felt like, oh, we should be giving you music all the time.
PS1 was where the classic, you know, original discipline of game music and, you know, the same like mindset of creating game music and filling games with music that held throughout the 8 and especially 16-bit generations was still intact. And the technology was there to allow that music to sound great. And, you know, the next generation, things would start to tip away. But PS1 is where all of those things really came together. And that is why I personally hold it as the best platform for game music.
You're making a good case. I would also say PS1, because it was such a well-made sound environment for making sound in games, you start to actually get interesting, well-done games about sound and music. Of course, we'll get to that later, and there have been whole episodes about that. But yeah, it was this interesting, you know, intersection of technology and talent.
Yeah, and I mean, all of these things had existed, like games about sound and music. You had, you know, Otoki on Famicom Disk System, and you had Marky Mark Make My Video or whatever Sega CD. Like Peter Gabriel's Explora 1 or something.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't like just pure Redbook audio, so you prefer PS1 because they can't possibly do a full soundtrack with Redbook audio. So they have these other alternatives that end up being better for games. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not totally averse to Redbook audio, but I think it has to be used smartly. It has to be used tactically. There are some Redbook audio CDs soundtracks on PlayStation.
Few and far between.
Yeah, but like, you know, the Street Fighter collection.
Right.
And that's fine. But it was cool to have that because I could like listen to the soundtrack to Street Fighter 2 and not have to buy it separately.
Right. Well, I know we're not listing any games yet, but I guess I might as well just say like at launch, one of the key titles at the launch of PlayStation was Namco's Ridge Racer. And Namco's Ridge Racer was Redbook audio and I played the hell out of that disc.
But again, that's a racing game where you have a very limited time on those tracks.
But like me and all my friends were listening to that like a CD at the time, and that was a very new thing.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking of the composers who would just bring in their – I don't know how this worked. Sure there were libraries provided, but a lot of developers would have their own like sound fonts and sound libraries. Like there's like a very distinct sound you hear in like Hitoshi Sakamoto's scores.
He's exactly what I was going to say.
And that sound, like that sound he had on the PlayStation, like all of his scores still sound like that. Like they don't sound any different. Yeah, they're just pre-recorded now.
I don't know if it's the instruments, like virtual instruments he used, or just his use of reverb.
Yeah.
But everything has like and not just on PlayStation, also, you know, Radiant Silver Gun.
It's like his signature
sound. Yeah. Like, that's what Bass Escape music sounds like for the most part. But it, you know, that was the opportunity for him to start exploring that. He composed for Super Famicom before that, and he was doing great compositions, but he didn't have his sound yet. But then, you know, Final Fantasy Tactics came along, and all of a sudden, that allowed him and Masahiro Iwai to create, you know, music similar to what they did for Tactics Ogre, but bigger and more bombastic because of the you know, like the sound quality. It was like they were performing they recorded their music in a concert hall or something.
Well, and it is true. Like at this era already, I had my system, my consoles hooked up through, you know, a little stereo with speakers in my room. And I'd played Sega CD, I played TurboGrafx. But like some of the Yellow Book games on PS1 did sound almost just as good. Like it wasn't as if I'm hearing like a scratchy, bad, low volume version of this stuff, you know. So like it was new and fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bought a few soundtrack CDs for Super NES games. And if you listen to those soundtracks, everyone was like, oh, it's a video game. You know, Chrono Trigger or Secret of Mana or whatever. Like, it was clearly video game music. But, you know, once I started listening or playing PlayStation games, I would buy the soundtracks to, like, Suikoden or Symphony of the Night or whatever. And people would hear that music and be like, what is this? It's really good.
Is it a film score? Yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah. People really were in, you know, I would when I was working at the student newspaper, I would listen to Symphony of the Night, and people didn't know it was from a video game.
Okay,
what is this?
I came here assuming we weren't allowed to say Symphony of the Night because it's so obvious. But
it's going to be mentioned.
Don't worry. Yeah, well, yeah, and that I think for many people, and that was you know 2 years into.
Why would we cover PlayStation soundtracks and not mention Symphony? Yeah. That's a weird idea, like, Shane.
You know, I think that was one that. You know, that broke open people's idea of what was possible coming out of the speakers of your game. And there was so much music in that game, too. So, yeah, it's obviously almost everyone's fave.
So I don't know if we want to belabor this any further. I don't know.
Like, I said, we could just get to the games.
Yeah, I feel like we should just go to the letters.
I kind of wanted to go – but like have you arranged them chronologically from release of games?
No. I just – basically it was first respondents, first served.
Well, I guess before we get to that, when I mentioned Korn at the beginning of this, there was this weird CD, music CD that you could later put in your PlayStation that you got if you put money down at retail to pre-order a PlayStation pre-launch. And it had Korn on it. And this was like the first time – one of the first times licensed music was thrust at the gamer. And, you know, very shortly after launch, actually at launch in Wipeout, you're getting licensed music, real good, interesting, avant-garde, IDM from Europe and stuff in your game. And like, within a few years, you'll be getting lots more licensed music in soundtracks as well. So I think that is a fundamental shift in this generation.
Yeah, yeah, the use of licensed soundtracks. There are a few mentions in these letters of licensed soundtracks, but to me, I'm really thinking more in terms of like original compositions, like video game music.
Right. But I think some people would point to license as a good thing, and that's something that didn't happen until this
generation. Yeah, I'm not saying it's bad. Like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater gets a mention in here.
Right. I was thinking about that this entire time.
Yeah, I have Wipeout XL on my list of top five actually because it really for me was like I was into that genre of music and it had things I liked, which that you know that had never happened before.
Right, and you know this is kind of up until like 2000, 2001, so not every game has Dragula in it.
It'd always be fun when I would see these games in stores and they would be like with music by blank and I'm like, who is God Lives Underwater? Should I care about this?
And if young people aren't familiar with Rob Zombie's Dragula – you should know it, but it should have been
need
like
to own a Dreamcast,
right? But it was also in like Twisted Metal 2, I think. But it was in lots of games on PS1, and then tragically, Sega of America added it to the amazing soundtrack of Jet Set Radio when they brought it to America as Jet Grind Radio, almost as like a slap in the face. Like, what could you know? How badly can we ruin a soundtrack? We're going to put Dracula in it.
All right, so let's just jump into the listener mail. So from Haitani, The favorite score on PS1 is a cruel question. There are so many good ones to choose from. Just thinking about all the Squaresoft games back then. The soundtracks on PS1 in general were in a pretty awesome time period for video games regarding new technologies. On 8 and 16-bit consoles, you were limited by data sizes and had to come up with looping songs that don't annoy you after two loops, and most achieved that. This way, a lot of composers created very catchy, melodic tracks we're all still humming today. When CD-ROMs were a thing, it was a whole new world in regards to size and sound quality. With composers still living their last-gen mentality of creating melodies, they have created a whole lot of awesome, video gamey sounding, high-quality soundtracks. I feel like since console generation 7, we often had generic movie orchestrals because it's epic. So I did not actually read this letter in advance, but...
Is this your secret pseudonym?
No, I just noticed that he or she wrote in first and left the first message, and so I stuck it here at the beginning. But yes, that's exactly what I was saying. Like all the things that I was stumbling through, this person said very efficiently.
Great,
so thank you. Hi, Tani.
I'm thinking about Square soundtracks to the PlayStation 1. It's a game I would never want to play ever again, but I use the music all the time when I'm writing. That's Legend of Mana. I mean, the first major song is just an orchestral song or whatever, but the rest is the – is it streaming? Is it sound font stuff?
It's streaming,
okay,
yeah.
But it's fantastic stuff.
I think, yeah.
It's like it's my favorite part of that game actually.
Yeah, it's understandable.
It's the best part.
We'll definitely get to Legend of Mana. All right, from the 16643, the one PS disc that my father and brother used to put in the car CD player and play was Vigilante 8, Second Defense. Mm. I can use two words to describe it, Fun K.
That's great. This is kind of a spinoff of Interstate 76, that series, and that game was just like had a bunch of funky tracks on the disc that would play sort of like a car radio. They would just play an album of these especially made tracks for the
game.
Yeah,
kind of before GTA did that.
Yeah. They're really good too.
Actually sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
It actually sounds a bit like Naganuma's Good Stuff for Jet Set Radio too.
Nation of Japanimation says, without a doubt, my top soundtrack from the PS1 has to be Ridge Racer Type 4. Each track had a perfectly chill vibe, which reminded the player that no matter how fast you're going or how tight the races are, you should relax and just enjoy the feeling of driving. It's my go-to album to listen to while I'm snowboarding, as it just has a way of making me zone out and unwind. Adam says, for me, it's got to be Ridge Racer Type 4. To those who have never played it, it might just seem like your average arcade racer from the outset. But Namco conceived an aesthetic for that game's UI and soundtrack that was the epitome of cool back in 99. And even today, there's still nothing like it. The emotional acid jazz score not only sounds beautiful on its own, but contextualizes the story mode and gameplay, making it feel like you're racing for something more than a win. It's all great, but my favorite tracks are Pearl Blue Soul, Move Me, and Spiral Ahead.
So it's spectacular. I mean, that game is wonderful. It's aesthetically gorgeous. But, you know, it's funny. I considered that on my list, but I ended up putting Ridge Racer Revolution because it's a little more pure to the Ridge Racer vibe. Like, I feel like RE4 is almost too classy. It's like you're at a jazz club in Tokyo.
But that's why I love it. I don't really enjoy racing games, but Ridge Racer Type 4 is the one classic racing game that I have – played in its entirety and beaten every race.
I wish they would remake it or something, right?
I don't trust them to do it right. There was something about the musical quality, like high quality music, and like just the super chill vibe, and then the sort of abstraction you get from that level of PS1 games. I mean, that was an amazing looking PS1 game. But you're like driving into the sunsets, and something about like that sort of dithered, relatively low resolution, you know, just rendition of Europe. Mm. Well, I don't think it would work as well in HD.
It's true. But like, I felt like that soundtrack deviated too far from like kind of the weird, happy, hardcore, super strange techno that the first two and even Rage Racer had some of that too. But he's right. It's something that was kind of forgotten about too. I think a lot of people might not know what this game even looks or sounds like.
So I mean, I went into Ridge Racer 5 expecting more of the same, and it was just like,
oh no, it was back. It was kind of more like greatest hits of the first 2 years.
Yeah. Like Ridge Racer has never captured that vibe again. Racer has, and it's such a disappointment.
Has Namco given up on the series at all?
The last few were like R Racing Evolution. They weren't even developed internally. Yeah, I feel like
it's weird.
I mean, I guess there was a new one on Vita that was the last.
I don't think they released that.
I think
the Vita one came out.
They did? Okay, weird. Okay, I played a demo and it was just like play with the logo with a touchscreen.
No, I think it's Ridge Racer.
It's a bit like Ridge Racer 5 or 6 again.
Unfortunately, I don't have experience with this series, but I have to say a Namco game that unexpectedly has great music is Ace Combat.
That gets a mention?
Okay, yeah. It's freaking amazing.
We'll definitely get to that, but here's a few samples of Ridge Racer Type 4. This one's Urban Fragments.
Oh, there are vocals. Because, there are vocals in some of the previous Ridge Racer stuff, too.
This is the opening movie.
Oh, which is amazing. They always had a new, like, CG image model, and I think this one was, like, wearing a 60s miniskirt, kind of twiggy looking. Yeah, great. Also, this game came with a 60 first FPS high-res mode version of Ridge Racer 1, one of the few high-res mode PS1 games. And it was a crazy controller, the JogCon controller, which wasn't as fun to me as the NedgeCon controller, but still worth seeking out if you're crazy.
Was the JogCon the one where you twisted?
That's the NedgeCon. The JogCon has like a wheel that you put your thumb in and you like spin it around. Yeah, I mean, the slap bass sounds real, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's just like the select screen, but it sounds great. So we'll get to the three that Adam mentioned. Pro Blue Soul is first.
Man, it's taking me back to the club. Oh, yeah, I totally remember this song. God, you're going to make me dig this game out, T-Frog.
I'm just seeing glow sticks spinning around.
No, it's not intense enough for that. It's not like that grinding hardcore sound.
You need to hear some of the weird happy hardcore from the first two games. It gives you headaches in a good way. Oh, yeah.
It's got the flute and electric piano.
I thought, for me, like this game, the soundtrack and the aesthetic of the game itself kind of reminded me of this Japanese band called Pizzicato 5. They kind of had crossover success in America around the same time, too.
Yep.
Yeah, very like, you know, classy throwback to the 60s. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, this is my favorite song from you're right, the soundtrack. You're taking me back, T-Frog. Because, you know, I'm not a young man. And I think I reviewed this game.
Wow. All right. I wasn't quite in the press at this point, but definitely spent a lot of time with this game. And, this is one of those synesthetic experiences where you, like, hear the music and you visualize the game.
It's kind of blowing my mind how this is filling me with nostalgia because, you know, this is 20 years ago, right? Like, you know, I don't think I played a racing game with a soundtrack like this in the last 10 years. I wish someone would do it again.
And finally, Move Me. I'm starting to feel like a DJ.
I'm seeing some results right now.
This game had this interesting whole, like, long story mode of sorts with, like, different teams and some intrigue and lots of characters.
And there was a Klonoa car.
There was a Klonoa car.
There was also a Pac-Man car that looked like Pac-Man.
It was hideous.
It was, but it was such a hilarious contrast to this music. So this game could get, you know, the soundtrack could get pretty intense, but for the most part, like, I think of the really mellow Eurobeat stuff when I think of Ridge Racer Type 4.
But, I mean, I think I misjudge it. I think it does, on several of these tracks, reference back to the first two games. Like, this song definitely references the first game soundtrack.
All right, so a series of ambiguous emoji writes, Chrono Cross was the first video game soundtrack that I bought. And before I did, I used to park Surge on the map of another world and let Dream of the Shore Near Another World loop out of my TV while I studied. I have mixed feelings about the game as a whole. Put on Scar of Time, and I become a puddle of positive feelings.
Okay, I think I wrote that letter because that's literally I've on this podcast many times I've complained about how Chrono Cross is like the worst characters ever. There's like, you know, a damn cactus.
Oh, you love Mojo.
It's like a rogues gallery. The game falls falls apart, but it's the best soundtrack.
I mean,
oh my god,
this is a soundtrack that I would drive around at night just to listen
to
the music.
I play the soundtrack at work at least twice a week.
Something for me, like, Ridge Racer 4 is great for listening to while you're pretending to drive, but this music is, like, night driving
song. This song is A-plus prime perfect. I mean, come at me, bro. Like, really, like, I dare someone to think of a better Mitsuda track than this, maybe.
Okay, but it doesn't sound that impressive now.
No.
Just you wait.
He's got to kick in. When those drums kick in. But
the bass.
Was this song Red Book on the disc or something?
No.
It was attached to a Cuts, like, CGI.
This is the opening.
Yeah, it's the opening.
This is the opening.
But like, it seems all like, you know, mellow.
They make you
want
it when the fiddles. I know you like Celtic. Well, you're not Kohler.
Yeah, that's Kohler. Hang on. This is like the Phil Collins In the Air Tonight drum break right here.
Are you sure it's not Red Book?
I'm positive.
Because
you can't just listen to it off the disc.
What if it's like a pre-recorded audio attached to the cutscene? Like,
I think Bob is right.
I think
there's something better about this track.
Oh, I know. I think I know why it's Red Book, because it's something that bothers me. If you listen to the recording, somebody drops something in the first 5 seconds. Like, there's a mistake. Like, somebody drops. Like,
oh yeah, like streaming audio catches all that.
No, but you're right. There's actually like the sound of like a baton or something hitting something in this song at the very beginning. Like, it's kind of low in the mix.
But it's like they couldn't do another take. Like, somebody dropped.
But it's transcendent.
Yeah.
And like, what's more, like, that is, you know, it is representative of the rest of the soundtrack. You're gonna play some more songs, but I feel like this game, more than any other like four disc square PS1 RPG.
Only two. Oh,
it's three. It's three discs.
Chrono Cross. No,
Chrono Cross is three discs. But you know, it's more consistent than Final Fantasy VII or IX.
You were talking about, you know, being able to hear someone drop something. One of the things that really struck me about this track, this is Home Goldove, is that you can hear like sliding on the strings, but it's still streaming. It's just like super high quality.
But I love it because it kind of it feels like physical.
You get that?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I mean, do you agree that this is his finest work, this game?
Oh, yeah. I think this soundtrack killed him. And he went into seclusion. Now only does, like, 5 songs per soundtrack. He does. I mean, the songs he does are good, but now he's just, like, a pinch hitter, I think.
Well, I think he also he's more self-referential these days.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, he did a okay soundtrack for a very bad game, Suganai or whatever.
Suganai Atonement. That soundtrack is really good.
It's really good. That game is ass. But it feels like he is, like, referencing his Chrono Cross stuff a lot in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he really got into the Celtic thing at this point. There's such a wide variety of styles in this. Like, I love
the dungeons there.
People imprisoned by destiny. This is like Joe Hisaishi right here. Yeah. Like, this belongs in a Ghibli movie. This is a battle theme.
Mm-hmm. It takes a while to get going, doesn't it? Or is this the one that stays like throughout?
It stays pretty mellow.
Yeah,
this is the battle theme against Serge's father or his father's friend.
It's a sad battle.
It is. It's in front of Lene's bell.
A saddle.
Yeah. At sunset. Like, I don't know if this means anything to anyone who hasn't played the game, but if you have played the game and really got into it and, like, got into the story, you can't hear this without being, like, taken back to that moment where you're fighting this man you don't want to fight, but you have to because he's, like, you know, trying to stop you from accidentally destroying the world. Well,
and,
so good.
But the, and also the fact that this melody is like this one of the other leitmotifs you already heard already, but it's played in a minor key super slowly to make it this like crazy.
Yeah, this is like the Radical Dreamers
theme. It's the same theme, just like totally distorted.
So it's it builds to a crescendo, but it never becomes like a battle theme.
Yeah, the soundtrack runs the gamut, but it's super cohesive too. The instrumentation throughout is gorgeous.
I have a feeling we're only going to get through like 5 games.
Oh man,
they're going to be damn
good.
But
this game, I mean, you should do a whole episode on the soundtrack almost. It's that good.
Well, we'll do a full Chrono Cross episode at some point.
Oh, the characters though. And the frame rate. Go back and play that.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, the frame rate's terrible.
Single digits.
It's like 12 frames a second at all. Here's a great one. This is an Overworld theme.
Oh.
And this one calls back to Chrono Cross or Chrono Trigger's soundtrack.
I love the percussions.
But yeah, like the shaking drum.
It's very Peter Gabriel.
Yes. This is like the In Your Eyes of Chrono Trigger.
There's just like this haunting beauty and longing to this, to many of the tracks on this.
Love it.
There's so much more like texture that he could add, you know, he could work with, all composers could work with on PlayStation compared to Super NES. Like, Chrono Trigger has an amazing soundtrack, but it just doesn't begin to compare what he did with this.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, you have your progressive rock.
One of my favorites again. I wonder if he felt like a competition with Uematsu. Because, like, you know, between this generation, like the soundtracks for Final Fantasy VII and VIII sold like a million units in Japan or something.
Yeah.
They were legitimate hits. Like,
I think that in terms of like instrumentation, he definitely won because I love the Final Fantasy IX soundtrack, but it does not, in terms of sound quality, does not sound as good as this. I don't know if the compositions are better. I'd have to go back and listen to it, but
I think this has better compositions.
Yeah.
Still great music.
But you're right. Maybe he did like, you know, kind of like ruin himself by putting so much into this that he could never top it. But it totally holds up. I mean, like, as I said, I listen to this all the time. I wish more games had soundtracks like this.
Mm-hmm. And we'll end Chrono Cross with what other than Radical Dreamers?
This is a real guitar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
No, I mean, like,
yeah.
The thing about Yellow Book Audio is it can be live recorded instrumentation.
Right, right.
And it's streaming
the
audio.
The bit rate is lower.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm just trying to like get a feel for what it is because
You could tell like the production, like it was mic'd really properly. Like, you know, in a studio with lots of money was spent.
Yeah, I mean, listen to the echo on the guitar strings.
Yeah.
I mean, I just feel like games of this era, especially even big budget games, like you get two songs recorded live per RPG. Like that's basically it. So they got a beginning song and an ending song, and that was it.
T-Frog, correct me if I'm wrong. Did the arrangement finally come out for this like last year and I failed to buy it? Do I need to buy it right now?
Yeah, there's an album that...
Oh, wow. They've been talking about it for like a decade.
Right, I think it finally came out, but it wasn't out at TGS. Maybe it came out right after TGS? I need to buy it.
No, I picked it up last year in Tokyo in May.
Was the vinyl out?
I got the vinyl at the Square store.
Okay, I got it.
Like, that's where you got to go. You got to go to the Square Enix store in
Shinjuku. I'm hopping on a plane after this podcast.
I don't know if they still have it, but at the time, yeah, like it was selling for like $150 online and it was $40 at Square
store. But it's not as good as The Brink of Time, is it? Because that's like
it's totally different.
The Brink of Time is god tier. I read your review of this, and you said it wasn't quite as good, but it's still really good. I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, nothing is like The Brink of Time. Like that is
that's actually
Mitsuda wouldn't do an album.
That's
like
actually
Brink
his most
down.
Genius work. And I think if you think about it, I think Brink of Time did influence. He was a little more adventurous with this, you know.
Yeah, I can see that.
From David Camacho. There are a lot of obvious... Oh, sorry. We're going back to mail talking about different games now. That was Chrono Cross.
Chrono Cross. Best in class.
From David Camacho. There are a lot of obvious answers to this, but I want to give a shout out to Mega Man X6. Game gets a lot of hate. It's definitely a mess. But man, I love it. And some of that might be because of its soundtrack. the intro stage song and Commander Yamark's theme especially.
I know you love this game, Jeremy.
It's certainly not the localization that is noted for.
This game is a steaming pile of garbage, but the soundtrack is phenomenal. Well, it really is.
It's funny. I was looking back on all the Rockman games of this gen, and I was, even though I consider Rockman 8 a Saturn game more than a PS1 game, I chose X. I loved the composition and some of the remixes, but I don't even remember Rockman X6's music.
You call it Rockman.
So I'm excited to hear this because I played that game. I reviewed it, but it's not a good game. So like my memory is clouded with how bad the game is.
Well, here we go.
It's good. It's like Final Fantasy's happening too.
Kind of, yeah. So this game, yeah, I hated it when I played it, but... right around the time this game came out, Capcom or Soloputer released two different sets of Rockman soundtracks in Japan. One of them was a box of Rockman 1 through 6, and one of them was a box of Rockman X 1 through 6.
I have the Rockman 1 through 6.
I picked those up, yeah. And so, you know, I was listening through them and like, okay, yeah, this is good. And I got to the Mega Man X6 soundtrack and was like... how do I not remember this music being this good? I guess it's because I was so angry and just like shooting daggers at the screen.
God. Yeah, there are so many games that are awful but have great soundtracks. I can think of like, I listened to the Dawn of Mana soundtrack a lot. It's not PlayStation 1, but it's just like, there are so many songs in that soundtrack. That game is terrible.
That's Yoko Shimomura, right?
I think it's a lot of people, but it's just like, I can't believe you put this much work into such a bad game. It's like four discs.
I don't think they knew it was bad.
Yeah. Like, I guess they had a lot of ambition.
All right, here's Commander Yanmark.
Oh, it's got a jazzy tone
yeah.
too.
I don't know that this would have been my pick as a favorite.
I like it though. But you know, the other thing about this gen of Mega Man soundtracks is like, as great as the NES ones were, the loops were so short, and here they actually like stretch out and have more exploration through the levels of this music.
Yeah, they have long intros before they get to the meat of the song.
Yep, here we go.
You know, it's funny, Capcom's vibe this generation, one of my choices here, someone else probably mentioned, is Breath of Fire 3, which is similarly jazzy.
Actually, no one mentioned
that. Breath of Fire 3 has a spectacular soundtrack.
It totally rips off Chrono Trigger, too.
It does, and it's a departure for the soundtrack. It's a departure for the series because it has a jazzy kind of feel. And also, like, Street Fighter EX, very nice jazzy feel. This is pretty jazzy, too.
You have Marvel vs. Capcom 2.
Yeah.
That is as jazzy as it gets.
Too jazzy.
It's going to take you for a ride.
10-second right. loop.
So my pick for Mega Man X6 actually is the episode, the track named after our favorite Retronauts former contributor, Metal Shark Player. I think this is the one. Just like quintessential Capcom synthesizer butt rock.
Yeah, it's kind of more a throwback to the 16-bit era stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But then, yeah, all of a sudden they're like, oh, surprise, guess what? It's techno. This game did not deserve this soundtrack.
Nah.
The hell with you, Mega Man X6. All right. From Matt Cartwright. Here we go. Legend of Mana has one of the most emotional and beautiful soundtracks of any game I've ever played. The soundtrack itself is Yoko Shimomura's personal favorite. Even if you don't like the game, every single track has something to offer, from the calming nostalgic presence of Where the Heart Resides to the uplifting adventurous Wind's Sign of a Journey and the emotional finale of Song of Mana, not to mention the boss themes, which if nothing else will get your adrenaline rushing. This soundtrack serves as an inspiration to me and remains the most memorable of the PS1 era. So let me see. Here we have a couple of selections.
I did not know that she considered this her favorite work.
I can understand why.
I don't think it's mine, but here, maybe I'll reassess it.
Do we know what language this is in? It's in a real language, not a made-up
Actually, I
language.
Don't think this is.
Oh, this is not the vocal theme?
Nope. Sorry, okay. Wrong track. My bad. I miscued.
DJ.
Oh my goodness. Kick me out. There we go. This is the one that made me stop and say, what the hell?
It's like Welsh or something.
I think it's like Swedish or something.
Gaelic. Is pretty, you know, I haven't heard this in 20 years. Because, you know, I wanted to love this game. Didn't we all want to love this game?
You're the guy who talks at the concert, aren't you?
I was on board for the Summer of Adventure when this happened, buying all those games.
Brave Fencer.
Shards of Fate. Brave Fencer was a few years before. This is like Summer of 2000.
Threads of Fate.
Threads of Fate, Vagrant Story, Chrono Cross.
This is really cool.
Such a good piece of music. Normally, I really hated the pop tracks in games of this era.
I didn't. And
I Am the Wind.
Oh, well, okay, that's an outlier. But I was going to say, Square and other Capcom and Konami, right, of this generation realized, hey, we can treat these games like anime, give them the opening and the ending theme, spend a lot of money really writing and producing a good song for that. And it did make a big difference. It made the game feel like a big deal.
It is Swedish. It's sung by a Swedish woman that Yokomura wanted to work with.
Gosh, you know, these days, she's not underrated as a composer, but back then, she was still pretty, like, new to the scene and not put in the same, class as the others.
I don't know. I think she made her mark with Parasite Eve. As a known quantity.
Right. That's on my list. I assume someone else is going to pick it, but, like, really, I thought of Kingdom Hearts is where her, reputation blew up.
I think it's when she became a name. Parasite Eve was good, but Kingdom Hearts was a Disney explosion.
So I wanted to point out this track from Legend of Mana, Moonlit City Roa, because it brings in motifs of Hiroki Kikuta's soundtrack for Secret of Mana, like the gamelan elements, but it makes it its own thing. Like, she really kind of takes the history of Mana music and puts a new spin on it. Probably didn't play far enough into the game.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I was like, I did not sign up for Final Fight with Precious Moments figures. That's what this game is.
Is there an arrangement of this,
of this album? Yeah. I don't believe so, though. All right. I'm going to jump ahead to Muteki, who says, I'm a sucker for the Castlevania Chronicles soundtrack. It includes, with quite high fidelity, all the original variations of the sublime music from the original X68000 version of the game, even in America, if I hit all four trigger buttons when starting a game, and also includes an excellent set of remixes of the tunes by Sota Fujimori, one of the more important names in the Beatmania series. And appropriately enough, it means the soundtrack is some well-mastered dance remixes of the original tunes. Vampire Killer and You Goddamn Bathead, the final boss music, stand out as particularly inspired choices from it.
Oh, I'm a big fan of whatever song that is where Dracula raps. There's a Castlevania.
That is not this one. You're thinking of Dracula Battle?
Yes, Dracula Battle Selection 2.
I know it was in no game.
But that's just a great choice. Obviously, this is on my list as well. And
I will drink your blood like soda, pop.
He or she is right about how awesome it is to play, I think, the three or four different variations of the sound chip from, the Sharp 68000 and stuff that you can choose in this, because they're all pretty different sounding. Mm-hmm. And then the arrangement is really different sounding. And personal note, this game came out, 2 years after Symphony of the Night, I think, right?
It's like a 2000 release. It was super
2001,
late.
Actually.
Right.
Wow,
And at this point, I'm a huge Castlevania Super Nerd fan back in the day, and this is post me getting to meet Igarashi. And I think the next year when I saw him at TS, he gave me the soundtrack to this game, which blew my mind. He was handing them out to journalists, and I was like, it's 4,800 yen usually because it's two discs. So I was like, thanks.
Oh, man, I should have been a journalist because I paid money for this.
I know,
one.
Right? Thanks, Iga.
All right, here we go with crazy bombastic intro. But yeah, when you hear the Vampire Killer theme redone like this, you're like, what?
Oh boy.
Did you ever play this one, Bob?
No, but it reminds me of music from Parodius. on the PlayStation, like the same sort of instrumentation, the same sort of like beats and everything to it.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking they have a really good version of Vampire Killer and I think Sexy Parodius.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Castlevania level in that game is amazing. You fight Medusa.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Also, this game is notable because it has a crazy redesign of Simon by Ayami Kojima, where it's kind of like glam metal.
I mean, he's a raver, just like this music.
His red hair?
Yeah, like pinkish hair in like the flat art. It's crazy. Also, this game is really hard. Did you ever finish it?
No.
I got really far in.
I beat it.
It got really bad reviews.
What?
No, it's good. It got mixed reviews, but it's actually pretty good. It's like an 8.
I recall, like, this is short and hard.
I think I gave it an 8.
The expectations were different for what a game on a dish could be in 2000.
I guess so. I guess I didn't read reviews of it because I just bought it and was like, this is cool.
This is a personal favorite from the soundtrack.
This is You Goddamn Bathead.
Yep.
Are these official titles?
Yeah.
This is the name of the song, the track. It's all in English.
I was really into You Goddamn Bathead 20 years ago.
Yeah, it takes like... I don't even know. What the hell is this?
Yeah, these are better than the Dracula X remixes, which is the Dracula X arrange album. Symphony of the Night arrange album, which is it's a problem.
Yeah, well, so weirdly enough, no one mentioned the Suikoden 2 soundtrack.
Oh, really?
Reminds me a lot of the Gothic Necklord theme when you fight Necklord for the final time and it starts out as like, you know, an organ, like... symphony kind of box sort of thing. And then all of a sudden it becomes like a techno theme that reprises the battle theme for the first.
But that's not indicative of Suikoden 2 soundtrack in general.
No, but it's such a, like a, what the hell moment. It's really great. It really sets off that.
Well, but I can't believe nobody chose Suikoden 2. Did someone choose Suikoden 1?
Yeah, it gets a mention. We're not going to make it through all the players. There may be a second and third PlayStation 1 game.
But I say Suikoden 2 does deserve mention.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're still talking about PlayStation 2 music.
You're still with the PlayStation 1 music.
You're still
here, and
I just looked at Captain N2, and the number 2 got stuck in my head. Yes, PlayStation 1 music. I don't care about PS2 music.
Not yet, no.
Unless it's Katamari Damacy.
There's other good ones. We'll get to that in due time.
Okay.
If society is still around.
All right. So Mr. Ray Barnholt couldn't be here with us because he's already recorded 2 episodes with us, and that's a lot to ask of anyone.
But does he have a suggestion? Is it a Ray one next?
He's here in spirit.
It's going to be my summer vacation.
He made – no.
No, that's PS2.
Yes. He made some suggestions for our notes, and even though I kind of threw out our notes in favor of reader-listener solicitations, fortunately Captain N2 stepped in and gave us a Ray Barnholt special. Many fine choices here, and I'd like to toss Intelligent Cube into the room.
See, that was
a puzzle game.
That's a good one.
But with a sweeping orchestral score worthy of an epic JRPG. So let's find out.
I almost put that on my list.
Wow.
This game is super cool. And it was the first game it was one of the first weird games that Sony published in America as well as Japan. I was super excited to buy it on day one. It gets really stressful.
What were you doing in this game? I totally forget.
Running away from giant cubes.
Cubes rolling at you.
And you had to find a safe space.
I didn't really get the game.
Oh, I played a ton of it. Yeah, you had to like, there was like a, you know, it's a mix of like surviving onslaught of cubes, but also like a puzzle solving, and the aesthetic was really weird. A stare.
This is very like, like Grandi or something.
It's a very Ray Barnholt.
Sakuraba kind of music.
But this game is a very Ray Barnholt game.
It sounds like John Williams now.
No, here I am flying around on my airship in Skies of Arcadia.
It's definitely incongruous with what's on screen.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, and the sequel to this game, and we're not talking about PS2, but like it is weird as if you
can that come
can
out.
Can I curse on here?
In, yeah,
we're allowed one F-bomb.
Oh no, well it's weird as all get out. Because this game has kind of like a flat look to it, and it all makes sense in objective reality. But the sequel is like FM video of people dancing, and like it's all like static, and it's weird. Strange stories.
Yeah, but I'm
but
glad.
Good, but a good one. I almost put it on.
I'm glad it's in there.
That's more of a forgotten deep cut, I think.
I think so.
From Hardcore Henry the Fifth, or maybe it's Hardcore Henry V. With all due respect to the 20-plus comments here on the blog where people were posting remarks, there's hardly a bad choice among them. But how in the flippin' heck is Guilty Gear not yet mentioned?
It's good.
Holy Orders owns your asses now and forever.
Heaven or hell. As I said earlier, at the very beginning of this podcast, heavy metal was possible. So, it, like, and Japan is good at heavy metal, and they love heavy metal in
the
Japan.
The 80s never ended in Japan.
No, like, huge heavy metal tours are always selling out in Japan.
Yeah, now we have Baby Metal, which is the newest band. Well, maybe it was a year ago.
They're still going.
They're still going? Okay.
They suffered a crisis.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's the real thing. It's authentic. It is all in.
It's very, like Joe Satriani?
That's the only name I can think of.
But like, much like this game, where every single character is a reference to an actual heavy metal personality, literally, you know, the soundtrack does have, I think it specifically references, you know, styles of different guitarists. Mm-hmm. And this game is beautiful, and it put Arc System Works on the map.
Yeah, true that.
I bought this game the day it came out.
All right, we have another two and one. Two people naming the same game. Braden Benite says, my favorite PS1 OST is probably going to be Wild Arms.
Woohoo!
Beautifully composed by Michiko Naruke.
Gorgeous.
It matches the elements of the music exactly with the elements of the game, mixing Western influences with fantasy. The memorable intro theme, Into the Wilderness, the fantastic world map theme, Lone Bird in the Shire, which sounds dubiously similar to a theme in The Good, Bad,
and the
Ugly, and the town theme with its awesome pan flutes are tunes that I've always loved since my childhood.
Have we done a Retronauts on Wild Arms?
Not yet.
Well, so
Sigma Symmetry says, the PS1 had a huge library of amazing soundtracks with the expansion to the CD-ROM format. We all know the greats such as Yasunori Mitsuda with Chrono Cross and Xenogears or legends like Nobuo Uematsu, but I feel Michiko Naruke, who composed the amazing Wild Arms soundtrack, deserves more credit than she receives. Not only did this amazing soundtrack project a Western feel perfectly, but it also captured the feel of loneliness and a dying world perfectly. I feel she could stand with the greats during this era, and it's a soundtrack I still listen to regularly today.
More importantly, this game came out before all those other games.
Yeah. It was the game.
Like, it was the game that, like, they snuck over and saw, you know, what was happening over there. Like, oh, let's get this thing out. But the music's great. And the fact that it's a Wild West, that really hadn't happened before? A JRPG with a Wild West setting? Not really.
There was, like, Live a Live.
Yeah, part of it. But
yeah,
in America.
The whole thing.
I mean, to be fair, they don't really do that much with it. It's sort of just, like, a little spice they add to the whole, like, medieval RPG thing.
Right.
But, yeah, this is amazing. Another kind of just sort of okay game.
It holds together, but it's well.
I don't
it's
think so.
No, but
I think only one Wild Arms game is good.
No, you're wrong. The fifth one's good. No,
it's a little too ambitious for.
Fifth one is crazy. It has nothing to do with any of the other games.
But okay, Shane, at the time when I was here. I played this game. When it came out, I enjoyed it. It wasn't as good as Final Fantasy turned out to be. It wasn't even as good as like a Grandia, but it was good and had good music. And the story's not so great, but the art's pretty good. Battle graphics aren't great.
I'm not a fan of the game, but the soundtrack.
Haters
like,
gonna hate. It's
I could just watch this opening.
It's like a good 6.5. Leave it alone.
The really amazing thing about
I said it was okay.
The really amazing thing about this intro is that the Japanese version is a sung track by a woman, like a female vocalist, and it's okay. But they didn't want to license the vocal rights for this. But instead of just throwing out the track, they re-recorded the vocal track as whistling, and it's so
perfect
for Wild West.
Yeah, it's evocative.
Like, it's so much better than the Japanese version.
And it's a
kludge, you know, to, like, work around rights issues.
Yeah. And all those, like, Tales of Games, I don't know if they still do this, but they would always replace the intro that was, like, a J-pop song or J-rock. It would always be just, like, a very bland instrumental song, and I like that they actually made this choice.
Andy Lennon says, I know I won't be alone here, and it's probably an obvious choice, but you absolutely can't go past Symphony of the Night for a memorable soundtrack that enhanced the game experience like few others. Even as a musician myself, I had rarely paid much attention to soundtracks in games. They seem to generally run the gamut from annoying to functional. But when Symphony of the Night came out, it was the first instance I can recall being 100% blown away and engaged by the music as much as the graphics and gameplay. Its variety of moods perfectly complemented the locales. The instrumentation was top tier, and the compositional nose was always compelling. Let's just forget about the end credits song, shall we?
That is no longer in circulation, those end credits songs.
Thank God.
I guess Celine Dion's doppelganger wanted too much moolah.
Leave Cynthia alone.
Cynthia.
Even
is
like,
she the Silent Hill lady?
She
too?
Is. Okay. And, like, in Metal Gear, the first Metal Gear as well. In its totality, this is the single greatest video game soundtrack ever made. And like, you know, I think Jeremy as well has had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Yamane many times and talking about this at length. But it is, and at the time, like I bought, you know, did you get this when it came out in Japan, the game, Jeremy? Like, mind-blowing.
This was the first game I ever imported.
Me too. Well, not me, but for PS1, maybe now. But like, within the first hour of playing this game, I remember being in physical awe of what was happening. And had you finished Rondo of Blood before playing this game?
No.
Oh, I had. So like, I was so ready for anything. I had seen, really knew nothing what I was getting into. And how this game recontextualizes Castlevania, but the themes as well. There's just this.
It's very eclectic. I like how there are so many different kinds of music in it too.
Yeah, so that's kind of your standard like opening synthesizer track. Okay.
Fine. Well, it kind of does have several references to many of the other opening tracks from the last few games of Castlevania.
Mitch says the PS1 score that impacted me most in the era was the one from Symphony of the Night.
Mm.
Until Symphony, I had not been particularly impressed by the PlayStation's offerings. The blocky polygon graphics of most early titles did nothing for me so much that I generally assumed a PS1 game's music would be equally unappealing. Appropriately then, it was the music of Symphony, a game of 16-bit era pixel art right down to the reused Dracula X assets, that sold me on the musical power of the PlayStation. The soundtrack is perfectly complemented the game's neo-gothic visual style, and while I was already a believer in the power of chiptunes, here was a soundtrack that could pass as the orchestral backing of some melodramatic musical. The soundtrack of Symphony was essential to establishing the mood for the game's many set pieces. It could make individual levels feel ominous or inviting. In an age where so many video games struggle to imitate movies, despite their polygonal limitations, Symphony of the Night made me really think about how music could elevate a game, even an intentionally stylized, pixel-laden one, elevated into a work of art.
That's right. I mean, I feel like with this game especially, when you walk into a new area and there's a new song, like almost immediately you're left with an impression of what will follow from there, I think.
Right. So you go from like synthesizer rock or heavy metal to...
This is from the library.
When the harpsichord kicks in, you know you kind of, this is a different kind of area. And like, it's not scary. It's beautiful. But it's true. Like, the soundtrack is really only about 20% traditional Castlevania melodies and instrumentation. I'm sure you'll get some tracks that are much more desolate and terrifying and ambient.
This is one of those soundtracks that evokes memories not only of what you've seen, but like the overall sound design. Like I'm hearing the killing the Dullahans and their skulls bounce off.
Right. And like what you're doing in this game ultimately, especially over the course of the two castles, is kind of mundane. You're traversing a lot of the same things, having kind of similar combat. So the music ends up being a larger part of the experience aesthetically. Like it really felt like a huge part of the game to me. Personal favorite. Just like listen to the ambient parts that aren't sound effects, it's part of the music.
Right.
The drip of water.
Well, this does the heavily processed drum thing that would become a lot more common in later generations.
Right.
Like you didn't hear this style,
the first time you ever heard that.
I don't know about the first time.
Maybe.
But
to where it is in the mix, kind of. Like,
yeah. It's like it almost has that kind of like electronic, you know,
trip hop.
Not industrial,
trip-hop.
Yeah, like this could be a Portishead track.
Yeah,
then it goes all like into this chamber jazz.
But you know that, you know, yeah, she has a broad history of like, you know, jazz and classical. She also had listened to like, you know, Massive Attack and trip hop and techno, and she, you know, Mr. Money has a very broad, you know, broad taste.
Yeah, there's no other track like this before in video game history.
Yeah. And especially in Castlevania, although it does, you know, parts of it do kind of reference like underground waterway musics from Rondo of Blood, but in an entirely new way, in a very modern way. You know, this soundtrack's 21 years old.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Jeff McKnight says, I believe the Symphony of the Night soundtrack is not only the best soundtrack on PlayStation, it might be the best soundtrack of all time.
Yes.
Every piece of music has great hooks and fits the area where it is used to perfection. The horrible music over the end credits fits perfectly with the standard cheesy type song that would be playing over the end credits of Hollywood music. The use of no music in the load screen tunnels is perfect. It gives the game a natural feeling of break of a few seconds before the next piece of music begins. And that is why the Saturn version is bad. Because it has to
It's not the only reason.
No, but it has to load music like mid-stage.
Oh.
Hang on, I didn't want that one.
It's a good one. But it's not... there's at least two... There's at least one or two that I think you should...
I love this one because it starts out so sweeping because you're coming in just off the outer wall, which has a soundtrack or a sound very similar to this.
Yep.
But then after like 15 seconds, it stops. And you're like, oh, I'm going to Dracula.
Yep. And this kind of references the Dracula Battle Collection, which were the heavy metal arrange albums, which were really popular in Japan. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a really great use in a non-linear game. Of music that builds off what by design would be a, you know, the previous area you've been to. The first time you ever go to this area, the castle keep, you would have been in the outer wall. So this is really playing off the symphonic style of the previous track of music that you heard in a way that like completely kicks things into high gear. Love it. What was the one you wanted to hear?
I was thinking there's one of the boss themes that is just like, But it's not completely dissimilar to that, but like it's just like really heavy. I can't remember what it was, but you know, on the soundtrack, I listen to the CD a lot, so I know it's like late on the CD.
I got it. Well, let's move along to the next one. We're running through time here. Brian Kent says, I'm not sure if it qualifies as a score, but the Silent Hill 1 soundscape was sufficiently odd and creepy enough to give me the old heebie-jeebies.
This is another one on my list. And it was also, I was talking to Phil Fish the other day and I asked him what his favorite PS1 soundtrack was. He said Silent Hill 1.
So this is not a, a melodic album, but
no,
it's very atmospheric.
It's much darker and more like ambient than Silent Hill 2, and 3, which are my personal favorites.
Yeah.
But if you go back and put it in the context of the game, it actually at that time it was really scary because horror games had, you know, it's like, what is a horror game soundtrack? It was one of the first horror games like this.
Brian's letter says, I don't know that some of the insane metal scraping sounds and grating noises would have been possible without the use of CD audio. Besides that, there's the great theme song that has a somewhat Twin Peaks vibe with its twanging bass line and melancholia.
Yeah, we haven't talked about this. This is one of the few soundtracks where it's like, you just really can't listen to this outside of the game, outside of like a handful of songs.
There's on Halloween.
I will say that Mondo Music has released this on vinyl, and they did a really good job with the vinyl version of Silent Hill soundtrack. It's not like just something you want to pop on for casual listening, but they did a great job of balancing like the melodic elements with the atmospheric elements.
Yeah.
Like the arrangement is really good.
I will say the songs that do have melodies and like real instrumentation or more traditional instrumentation are very good to isolate and listen to.
I think the ending theme is actually really pretty good.
Yeah,
you know,
it is very good.
For Konami ending themes of the era.
Like a mandolin-ish thing.
Yeah, it is the only track that I have like in my library really for play. The opening is spectacular in this game.
Yeah, my problem with the I love Laura's theme, the opening for Silent Hill 2, but it's not the instrumentation is not very good. It's like it sounds a little cheap, a little hollow. But I still love the melody and like the emotionality of the song.
Yeah, this goes from like mandolins to techno music, so it's it's going some places.
Very referential to Twin Peaks composer Angelo Badalamenti.
But in a good way. The audio quality here has kind of like that AM radio sound too, which I think is deliberately tying into the radio mechanic in the game. So it's a really, really interesting selection of music. I definitely recommend people who want a little something different in game music to check out the vinyl release. Joe Drilling says, I know Bob will be with me when I say that one of the best original soundtracks on the PS1 is the Tokyo Ska Paradise Orchestra skanking to the beat score for Incredible Crisis. Like, you were complaining and the next letter was right there.
I read ahead.
Did you?
I said, you better not skip this next one because it's an insane soundtrack where it's just like it could only happen in 1999. All ska.
Earl Grey III says, without a doubt, the standout PlayStation soundtrack for me is 2000's Incredible Crisis. The music from the Tokyo Ska Paradise Orchestra was a ska-loving teenager's dream come true and remains surprisingly listenable to this day. Playing now, I still like the game's title theme, but I love the theme for the title select screen, a fittingly odd compliment for an odd game.
This is the dancing stage music. You got to play the intro song. I still like put it on every month, at least once a month.
All right, let me fade this down, and we'll switch over to the intro music.
And I dare anyone to tell me what this guy is saying at any part of this song.
From the Bob Servo channel.
That I uploaded this because I could not find a clean version on YouTube. This is all me, everybody.
41,000 views on yep. Bob Servo's channel. Congratulations.
It's my highest ranking video that I stole and uploaded. Yes. And this is the extended version. There is like a sax solo because it's a ska song. So a sax, I can't just sit there the whole time.
It's kind of amazing that this happened, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this was originally an arcade game in Japan, too, oddly enough. I discovered that much later at someone's cabinet.
Was it licensed off a TV show? No?
I don't think so.
I have no idea.
But Tokyo Ska Paradise, I think they're still around, someone told me. They still are doing ska, keeping it real in 2018.
It's good. The world needs some good ska. See one more track from Incredible Crisis.
It's more of a remix of the intro.
Into the synthesizers there.
Yeah, the only good game ever released by Titus, everybody. You heard it.
What about Titus the Blues Fighters 2000?
What? Blues Brothers 2000?
Yeah, sure. Titus the Fox is better than Blues Brothers.
But it's not as good as Incredible Crisis.
All right, here's one we were talking about during our break. Joseph Huckleberry says, as strange as it may sound, after Yoshi's Island, the first game to make me realize video games could be a platform for legitimately beautiful music was the original Ape Escape. I love Soichi Terada's score of this game so much, it's the only game soundtrack I keep in its entirety on my phone. I think I'll be listening to tracks like Krabby Beach, Dark Ruins, Spectre's Castle, and my favorite Primordial Ooze for the rest of my life. One really awesome thing about this game is that you could listen to a much chiller version of every level's music simply by crawling. Seriously, do yourself a favor and go crawl around in Primordial Ooze.
I forgot about that. That's amazing.
I had also forgot about this. Like I said, I remember this having great music, but I never got the soundtrack on a CD. You know, it's not something I returned to a lot. But yeah, the first two games I really enjoyed in the series. I should probably rediscover it.
So this is Primordial Ooze. I guess if you crawl around, you get more chill.
I would think that the two different versions would be available. I'm sure the soundtrack was available in Japan with everything on it.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, the soundtrack is very much about like drum loops and stuff like that. It's really neat. And very of its time. Mm-hmm.
Definitely not music that you think of catching monkeys. Probably a little better in the context of the game, though.
Mm-hmm.
Have a almost Nintendo-esque.
It does, yeah.
You know, you're mentioning Yoshi, and I actually remember. Yeah, also it's a little Rare-esque to me, you know, a little bit too. But yeah, it's interesting.
Have you heard like?
It's very pleasant, upbeat. You know, it's kind of a happy you know, like late 90s kiddie fun techno songs.
Ah, but then you get the counter melody in there.
Yeah, I love this game.
I think that game also ran in high res mode. It's a pretty game.
It was like a technical showpiece to show off the dual.
And it was made for the dual analog.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. We still have a ton of stuff to get through here. So I'm going to go ahead and save these for some other time.
Well, just, put on the ledger Metal Gear Solid, Parasite Eve. We didn't really go into those. Those are for next time.
Okay, no one actually mentioned Metal Gear Solid, but...
That is an astonishment.
But I was going to put... let's do one set of soundtrack or like one game each. Like as your pick, what do you think needs to be called out?
Well, before that, I also thought we had tabled pretty much Final Fantasy 7, 8 as like we've talked about those in the past.
We're going to do full deep dive episodes into 7 and 8. So right. We'll save those.
And as along with Parappa the Rapper and Gemma Lambert, which we've already done episode
right.
on.
Yep.
Again, best in class, spectacular soundtracks. But I would choose Parasite Eve to be my final one, I guess.
Okay. So
Metal Gear Solid is also, of note.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is Shane's pick, also Anthony Agnello's. Is there any greater generation for game soundtracks than PS1? Picking an all-time favorite is hard. Yoko Shimomura's Parasite Eve OST is her crowning achievement. Out of phase, the Police Precinct theme is possibly my favorite game song of all time. So he mentioned a few other games, Ridge Racer Type 4 and Masashi Hamauzu's Saga Frontier 2.
Which is good.
Yeah. Let's go into Parasite.
You had to play the intro song too. It's like, it's
theme of mitochondria?
That's probably it.
Oh, no. This is one of the ambient tracks
hear. Oh, it's really good though.
Yeah, like this game does a great job of balancing, kind of creepy ambiance in a different way than Silent Hill.
Well, and
with a sort of like cinematic Final Fantasy flair.
Right. What's interesting about this game is it has, a female protagonist. It's set in modern day, has Tetsuya Nomura character designs, this amazing Shimomura soundtrack. It has a really great blend of real time and turn based combat that not a lot of games were doing at that point, and like nobody did well. In fact, the sequel to this game abandoned it in a weird way.
Yeah, it's like a Resident Evil game.
Yeah,
I played through most of it.
Yeah, the first one's really, really good, and is popular at the time too. Yeah,
yeah, I love the battle theme in Parasite Eve because it's so different than any other RPG's battle theme. Again, it's kind of like down tempo, and it builds up like these crescendos, and then before it quite hits the climax, it drops down again.
Oh,
and listen to like that sort of echoey piano. Oh, you don't hear that in battle.
There's a lot of battles. So like this takes me back.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
But it really fits the style because it is real time, but it's also slow because
you're running around.
You're not just running around and pulling up menus, but you're targeting specific enemies. So there's a lot of like sort of minute granular strategy.
Right. As you play through the game, like the combat actually gets more complicated as you get different weapons and you're switching and you get like magic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the story's really interesting. The CG cutscenes are gorgeous at the time. But also, the game begins in this like opera house and the main enemy kind of appears to this like this, opera diva, right? Like infection thing taking over New York City. And there's like opera.
One of the weaknesses of the soundtrack is that the opera is all like that Final Fantasy VI sample voice.
It's not quite the opera of Final Fantasy VI.
It's a little better.
It's better, but it's still like.
But it's kind of club sample reference. Play it.
Yeah, it doesn't quite work. But I will say
I would disagree
that the opera scene. Okay, they don't work outside the context of the game. Like you can't just listen to the soundtrack because there's like these opera parts with a fake voice,
you're kind of right.
But when you finally fight Eve, it brings back her opera motifs and turns it into like a battle theme. And that is where it all comes together.
You're
That's
right.
Influence of Deep.
Yeah, this is it. I at the time thought she was actually referencing Uematsu. Like specifically to pay homage to him.
Here we go.
Yep.
But it's not just that there was like an opera intro. The opera becomes part of the battle theme.
He integrates it. Yeah, to me it felt like self-referential, referencing 16-bit and like bringing it into like the club here in IGN.
I remember interviewing Shimomura about this, about a lot of her work, but I specifically asked about this album and like what the inspiration was. She went off on this kind of like sort of reverie where she was talking about how like when putting this together, you know, this was a cooperative element between Square Japan and Square LA. And so she spent a lot of time in LA, and she said, you know, while I was there, I went to this club. It was really strange, and there was this music. And I feel like she had some sort of experience there that was, like, she can't explain, but was really, like, deeply affected her.
That's amazing. Yeah, you totally hear it in that song.
So I'll... What was the other track you wanted in there? The opening?
Well, I just remember being really bombastic, but it just kind of referenced that same. I think that kind of is a reprise of it, actually. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like you did her justice.
So, a lot of the dungeon themes are kind of like atmospheric, but then, you know, as the game becomes more intense and you start to like kind of gear up, then you do get more pieces like this. I think this is like once you've. Once the police station has come under attack and you're like, we're going to take the fight to Eve.
Yeah, it's really. This game is just really cohesive aesthetically, and I feel like her work was just stood out. And you know, unfortunately, I feel like the sequels of this game didn't really do justice. I said two I really didn't like, and then the third birthday for the PSP was also not quite as good as the first one. But I hope maybe they'll return to it in the future.
Yeah,
they don't have the rights to anything anymore.
Yeah,
it's like wink, third birthday.
All right, so Bob, what would your favorite?
Well,
PS1 RP or PS1 soundtrack.
I'm gonna cheat. Can I say I'm Dermot Lammy? Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, fine. Well, my selection would be "Got to Move," and I also would like to play the Parappa version as well. Because the cool thing about this game is that for almost all the levels, there is a Parappa B-side remix with all new lyrics, and it's just a remix of the song. So, "I'm Dermot Lammy," "Got to Move" is a tops in my book. I love girl bands, and this is a game about a girl band. And I love 90s music because I am an old man. It's just a fun late 90s pop song before the horrible next decade could begin. If there are any real life corollaries to this music or not. Get up, trying to psych
myself. It's interesting that you choose this track. Because it's probably my least favorite track in the entire game. But I still think it's great, actually. This is my favorite music game of all time. And because this is the last level.
Yeah, I think
it goes to other places. Because she references all the people she met. And it changes as it goes, this song changes it up later.
I feel like... The raps in Parappa all reference specific styles and even like individual MCs. I feel like all the music in Unjammer Lammy feels like it. You know, it's from
it's
another game.
Yeah, it's
like,
basically
Fright Flight is definitely Metallic and Black Sabbath.
Yeah,
Fire sounds a lot like Kung Fu Fighting. Of course, I Am a Master and You is like a reprise of the Chop Chop Master Chop Chop Master Onions rap battle theme, but done through a lens of like indie rock.
But there's the rockabilly song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a surf rock song.
Like, it's much like Parappa. It is like five genres, and the last song kind of combines it all into just kind of a fun, up-tempo J-pop kind of song.
You should play the Parappa.
Yeah, I'm going to play the
Parappa version because it's totally that one is different.
Yeah, I've got that queued up right here.
Yeah. Again, go back to our Parappa episode. Sorry, our Parappa Lammy episode.
This version is much better. This is. No time for tears. The goal is near. The goal is near. I'm trying to shift. To a higher gear. To a higher gear.
That's when I see all of you coming. I think this one is like one of the songs that is closer to the original with the Parappa. A lot of them are really different in terms of like the tempo and the lyrics and everything. But yeah, they did not advertise this on the box, goddammit. They did not say Parappa's in the game and there's a bunch of songs with him. They're so stupid.
For me, I want you to play either the level 4 or level 3.
The baby song? I like the baby song.
Either the baby song or the plane song.
Okay, we'll do baby.
That's really
good.
I've got that queued up.
I think that's the best. But I think the plane is almost as good.
I like the plane is just like Metallica.
Oh, but also the hell one's good too.
It's probably my favorite one to play in the game, actually.
Oh, this is long.
You just tap triangle a bunch now.
But to get cool, you don't do that. You have to play fewer notes.
Oh, yeah.
And bend them and shit. It's amazing. This is the greatest music in the world.
I can get it cool in every level, and this except for the awful idol stage. That song is bad. I hate it.
Well, that's hell in the Japanese version.
It's true.
And the song is better in the Japanese version.
It's fitting that that's the worst song because you are in hell.
But I actually think level 4 of this game, the next level, the plane level, is the single best music game experience of all time.
Alright, so finally, I will wrap up by saying the game soundtrack I want to call out that I think is often overlooked, and the one that actually inspired me to put together this episode in the first place, is Noriyuki Asakura's Tenchu soundtrack, which takes traditional-sounding Japanese melodies and themes and reinterprets them as contemporary electronic-tinged film scores, often with a choral element. Yeah, I wrote that down.
Did you play a ton of Tenchu? It's hard.
It's really hard. I never made it that far, but I bought the soundtrack because the first few stages had such good music. Oh, and like I've listened to the soundtrack over and over again.
I wanted to like it, but it was so hard.
It came out at the same time as Metal Gear Solid, which did stealth so much better and so much less punitively.
Instead of fog, there was just blackness.
Right.
And it was like, where am I?
But I do remember like the 2 hours I played having good music.
Yeah. This music's amazing.
But I gave up. But it was really popular. Production's good. Like, did you play other Tenchu games?
I did, and they never clicked for me. But the music in this game, so good. Asakura did the soundtracks to the Rurouni Kenshin anime.
Tenchu is From Software throughout, right? Or in the original? Who made the first one?
That was From Software.
It was from the beginning, From Software.
Yeah.
In fact, I think
it's by a choir.
Yeah. Oh, a choir.
It was originally by a choir, but then later it was by From Software. There's like there were at least like 5 Tenchu games. I mean, I played them on PS2.
Yeah. There are exactly 5. There are spin-offs.
What were they, Bob? And who made them? Who made the first one?
Stealth Assassin.
Was it a choir?
I think the first one is called Tenchu Stealth Assassin.
It is.
Choir. Yep.
Okay. Who made like by PS2? Who's making them? Maybe it was always a choir. They were just crazy. Were there ones on like PS3 and Xbox?
I don't believe so. Oh, there might have been one on PS3.
A multiplayer one?
The PS2 one is developed by K2.
Oh, okay.
I forget what they ever did.
Yeah. But like they've been published by different publishers. Activision published it. Maybe it was always Activision.
Ubisoft, too.
Ubisoft. Okay.
They published the last one in 2008.
It's been a while, yeah.
For Blast. Wii and PSP, an ignoble end to the
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, Blast from the Past. Who made the Wii one?
That's choir as well.
Okay. Well.
I think From made the PSP.
It's like a mini Tenchu Retronauts right there. I've learned things.
Yeah, I just like the combination of like Japanese sounds and Hollywood score and electronica. It's such an unusual
mix.
Blend. But it sounds really good, and I wish the game were as good as the music.
You know, people really liked it, but it was just so hard. I remember getting out like 9s in EGM and stuff.
Yeah, but again, it came out like 3 weeks before Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
And by the time I got around to it, I played Metal Gear Solid and was like, nope. These tracks do take a little while to kind of launch.
Yeah, but the production's really good.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those game soundtracks that really stands on its own as just like a piece of music. Great, like orchestrated instrumental music, which you can't really say about all game soundtracks. But that was one of the things I really appreciated about the PlayStation era is that you did get these soundtracks that just sounded so good. They held up so well.
And if you think about it, really, like the amount of work that went into creating a soundtrack for a game from 16-bit to 3-bit was something like tenfold, because you couldn't just hire one dude with his synthesizer, give him a few months to make like 10 chiptunes. It was literally like making a film score in some ways. Yeah. Yep. So, wow.
Yeah,
you're right, Jeremy. You know, I doubted you at the beginning of this journey, and you're right. PS1 may have the single best library for soundtracks in gaming.
And this was only half the letters we got from listeners. I think we're going to have to circle back at some point and do the other half of the letters, because one, those listeners deserve to be heard, and also the music that they picked out deserves to be heard. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm glad you agree that I made a successful case for the quality of PlayStation soundtracks. I'm glad I'm not hallucinating.
Well, it was a pleasure coming and discussing this with you.
I believe you, Jeremy, and I believe in you.
That's excellent. I'm glad to hear it, Bob. That means a lot. Thanks everyone who wrote in, whether we read your letter or not. I promise we will try to get back to it at some point. I don't know, maybe months from now. Who can say? But these are all in a Google document, and those stay online forever until Google gets destroyed.
That's dark.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be a bad thing.
Until they sell my documents to the highest bidder.
Exactly. Some other retro podcast is suddenly going to have a PlayStation 2 or PlayStation music podcast. Sorry.
In the ruins of our civilization, they'll find the Retronauts, and that's how they'll know about these soundtracks.
That's right. Our YouTube links. You shall know us by our YouTube links. Anyway, this has been a Retronauts episode. I hope that everyone enjoyed listening to it. I feel like it was kind of indulgent, but we weren't just indulging ourselves. We were indulging everyone who wrote in. So hopefully that kind of balances out. It's like community indulgence, a collective indulgence.
And game music is not some niche thing. A lot of people love music. Mm-hmm. And it is a huge part of gaming experiences and nostalgia. So.
Yeah. And
don't feel so guilty about being indulgent, Jeremy.
I always enjoy talking about game music and sharing it with people. So
I think we should
I'm
end
glad
every
I have the opportunity.
I think we should end every show with an apology. We're sorry.
I'm very sorry about this episode.
That
doesn't mean I won't do it again, though. I'm not that sorry. Mistakes were made, and we're going to keep making them. Anyway, thanks again, everyone who wrote in. Thanks, Shane, for coming in. Bob, why don't you guys tell us about yourselves? Shane?
Well, you can find my long, indulgent guitar solos on my Twitter at ShaneWatch. Yeah.
That's it? Oh, Shane has a real job. Never mind. I forgot.
No Patreon for Shane.
No Patreon. No. God, how do you live?
Patreons are awesome.
Yeah, they are. And hey, you know what? I'm Bob Mackie. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. And I make some of my bones from Retronauts, but I make most of them from the Talking Simpsons Patreon and our network of shows there. I do currently 3 podcasts for that network. If you go to patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons, you can get both Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon a week ahead of time and ad-free. And we can also give you such exclusives as Talking Futurama and Talking Critic and a whole bunch of other things like interviews and behind-the-scenes stuff and wrap-up shows. And we just do so much there. So please check it out. If you don't even want to give us money, I just suggest checking out our shows, Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon. They're both free. Talking Simpsons is a chronological exploration of The Simpsons, of course, and What a Cartoon is us doing a different episode of a different cartoon every week with the Talking Simpsons treatment and some great guests. So I recommend you check those out if you like me and my voice. Thank you.
Wow. That's a lot.
You've both got great radio voices.
Thank you.
Do I?
When you read the ads, they sound professional.
I've said this like 1,000 times by now. That's why.
I like that Bob and I both have like very different ways of reading the ads too. I'm always very just kind of straightforward. And he's like, hey, okay, I'm your friend and I'm here to tell you stuff.
Jeremy always pulls off completely genuine when you're selling like a dog or a car or something. Whereas once in a while, I can tell Bob is like secretly not wanting to sell me the box of food.
I am sincere. I stand behind every product that I get behind until there is a class action lawsuit. Then I duck out.
Right. Anyway, I, Jeremy Parrish, your close personal friend, can be found on Twitter as GameSpite at Retronauts.com, where I'm writing a lot. And finally, at the Retronauts podcast, which you're listening to, which is available on such fine networks as – fine podcast distribution sources as iTunes. So check us out that way, or better yet, go to patreon.com/retronauts and subscribe for $3 a month. You get this episode – well, not this episode, but the next episode a week early. If you liked this episode, you can get another episode today that is in higher bitrate quality and without ads. That's cool. Anyway, yeah, so that's what we do. We make podcasts. And it's very tiring making podcasts, and I'm very old, so I'm going to go take a nap.
I have one more question for you to plug. What's your latest book? Because I own several of your books, and I love them.
So I think by the time this episode comes out, my latest book will be Game Boy Works Volume 1,
You've been doing so much. You've been playing so much Game Boy. It's going to be good. I'm going to buy it, even though you know how I feel about Game Boy.
Yeah, well, it's the 1989 and 1990 Volume 1 books that I did for Amazon or like through Amazon. As paperbacks, it's combined into a single volume in hardcover, full color, and it's going to cost less than any of the either of the individual books did.
Awesome.
So that's the magic of Fangamer. You can get that at fangamer.com.
Yeah, I have your big NES ones, and those are good. So
glad you like those.
Even though maybe you'll make me reassess Game Boy because, you know, I tend to discount because I hate, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the original hardware, but it's good. So yeah, all right, I'll buy that.
After Game Boy, there will be Super NES, and Chris Kohler and I are working on a Virtual Boy compilation. Yeah, I'm getting ahead of the syllabus here, but it's true.
Wow.
Yeah, we're like that. The whole 20-game library, the two of us are collaborating on a book and video series.
Mm. You should make that.
Look forward to that.
You should make that one a glossy coffee table book.
That one, if we can pull it off, is going to have red, blue, anastropic glasses with it, you can see all the screenshots properly.
So good.
It's going to be the best Game Boy or Virtual Boy book ever.
That is something to look forward to.
So now that I've spoiled that surprise, everyone go home, and you should also take a nap. You're very old as well.
Yes.